The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
With me now, a real surprise guest for me. It's a great surprise when you can talk to somebody that is an attorney general of one of the great states of our United States. That would be West Virginia, and I'm talking about Patrick Morrissey. Welcome to my program.
Hey, Mike, it's great to see you. It's good to be with you today, and so much goodness coming out of West Virginia, and love to share stories from wild and wonderful.
It is wild and wonderful. I've been there. My brother-in-law used to live there, so I've spent some time there, and it is gorgeous. I remember looking over one of your many valley gorges that you have there on a beautiful bridge, and just looking at the scenery, it was breathtaking.
It really is spectacular, and there's really something for everyone. In West Virginia, you can go. People sometimes think of West Virginia and say, well, the state's all the same, right? And but that actually understates what's going on in our state, because you've got the Eastern Panhandle that has such a rich historic area. And you can talk a lot about the early foundational days of our republic and Jefferson going out. The whole Lewis and Clark expedition and the first post office. There's so much going on there. The role it played, the tension between the North and South of the Civil War. If you're an outdoors lover, the Appalachian Trail has a cut that runs through there. And then, of course, you can go to many other parts of the state. You can go down to southern West Virginia. It's so rich with beauty. The forested areas, you go to the southern coal fields, and every part of the state is just simply gorgeous. And you can find what works for you. If you like to fly fish, there's a spot for you in West Virginia. If you like to hunt, there are many places in West Virginia. If you want to go out on ATVs, come to West Virginia. If you just want to spend time and learn the history, go to West Virginia. Or if you just want to come meet some good old-fashioned down-to-earth people who appreciate God and they have traditional values, come to West Virginia.
I think that's beautifully said. You know, when you think about what you've just described, and coming from you, I mean, honestly, you would be a very good tour guide. You'd be a very good spokesperson for that great state. You are a third term now, Attorney General, and that role is so important in this day and age. It's probably, we hear from more things having to do with attorneys general, I think, in 2024 than we may have in my entire lifetime.
Yeah, look, it's an important position because of the role that the AGs play in our constitutional structure, because attorneys general really can be the point of the spear, especially when you get a federal government that's running out of control. And I would argue that this federal government and this administration has been way, way out of control. So you've seen a lot of the Republican attorneys general collaborate, come together on issues of the day, suing the Biden administration, and quite frankly, having a very high batting average. It's not enough to just sue. A lot of times people say, oh, you should sue, you should arrest, you should do X, Y, and Z. But what matters is picking the right spots, suing when it's the right thing to do, and then winning. Mm-hmm. And so the AGs have been really indispensable in guarding against a lot of the abuse on the rule of law and the freedoms that are at risk. And there are a lot of big threats facing our country now, and it's critical for attorneys general or governors, I should say, to step up in the arena, fight back, and make sure they're protecting our constitutional system and states' rights.
You just uttered my very next question. I've thought often about a needed book in our country, and that would be Whatever Happened to the Rule of Law, because it seems that on every front, especially when you consider all the things going on at the border, it's like we've thrown the notion of, first of all, a republic, a representative republic, which we are, and not a democracy, as it is often stated. We are a republic that believes in the rule of law, but not so much in 2024, right?
No, I mean, I think over a prolonged period of time, you've had a lot of people that are trying to go after our constitutional republic. And what I mean by that is that You hear about efforts to ignore the rule of law or strip away our freedoms, but I think it's more perverse than that. Because for time immemorial, from the beginning, the foundation of our country, the founders knew something pretty special. It wasn't enough to just have this great foundational document called the Constitution and to have the ability to add various amendments to the Constitution. You actually needed to have the kind of society that would be supporting that. And so the founders were very sensitive that you needed churches, you needed educational institutions, you needed civic associations, because that's the fabric, the netting, if you will, that upholds the Constitution, the rule of law. And once you start losing those institutions, that's a real problem. And I think what we've seen over a multi-decade period is that so many people have lost track of how government is supposed to operate in our country. It used to be that most problems people would think of should get resolved at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you live in Central Florida or you live in a Kanawha County, West Virginia. People would look to those, the counties or the local areas, to solve the problem. And that was good, because while there was a role for government, there was an even more important role for community and family and volunteerism. When you start to shift the nature of problem solving, first from the local to the state level, and then from the state to the federal level, you have people become disinterested in the process.
Wow.
And then you lose that sense of community, that sense of volunteerism. And I actually think that's part of what's responsible for what's happened in our country. And we'd be a heck of a lot better off if we could kind of return back to the scenario where families and community members are better engaged, where the civic bonds are stronger, where educational institutions are trying to not just brainwash kids in our school, where churches aren't being attacked.
Right.
If you got back to that place, then you start to see the true flowering of our constitutional republic take place again. But there's been such an aggressive effort, not just to win elections, but to erode these institutions that undergird our strength. And that's what bothers me. But quite frankly, that's what motivates me to get in the arena and fight and win, because you need a couple people to say, wait a minute, we can't let this other side do this, because they're trying to move us away from a constitutional republic. Some of the things they're doing smack of Marxism and communism. And I don't say those words very lightly, but when you try to get to all the preordained outcomes and that there's certain groups, some groups are more equal than others, you start to say, wait a minute, what's happening here? And I certainly get very motivated to oppose a lot of the insanity that I'm seeing from different quarters of our society.
Well, thank you for what you've done as Attorney General of West Virginia. And now you're running for governor. And by some of the polls, it's looking good for you.
You know, I never take anything for granted, but I think that we have a good chance. And we're going to keep working hard every single day. And I think that that's what people expect. So I'm running on my record. I'm a proven conservative with a record of getting big things done for the citizens of our state. And I think a lot of people know that, but I have to keep going. I know that I've been in some tough battles in the past, and there are people that don't like that I stand up for these principles, conservative principles, West Virginia values, our Constitution, because they want to have things their way. Well, there has to be a block in the system. And when I see what's going on, especially in Washington, D.C., I think it's going to be up to the states to step up and to make things happen and correct a lot of the corrosive things that we've seen happen to our country, our Constitution, the rule of law, and our way of life.
Well, I tell you, the governor role, the role of a governor of West Virginia, is a very important role.
It is.
And thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for serving these 12 years or more. How many terms?
It's gone by very quickly.
Boy,
it's amazing, right?
It is really crazy.
A little bit more gray hair, but no, I feel very fortunate. The people of West Virginia have been very kind to me, and I've tried to repay that kindness by working very hard, fighting and winning for them, whether it's trying to get the number one per capita opioid settlements in the country.
Right.
That's what we have in West Virginia. We've had a terrible problem with drugs. The fentanyl flooding in right now is terrible, off the charts, and a lot of we could spend hours on that topic
yes.
alone. The federal government has come after our state. We're a state that's relied very heavily on fossil fuels, coal, natural gas, and there was really an opportunity to grow and to shine. And it seems like the Biden administration wants to do everything imaginable to put the state down. But fortunately, there are some of us who say that's not going to happen on our watch. And that's what we fought as. That's what I've done as AG. And I'll be in a position to do a lot more of that as West Virginia's next governor.
Give us the website where people can find out more.
Absolutely. If you want to learn more, go to patrickmorrisey.com. That's MORRISEY.com. That's patrickmorrisey.com. And if you like what you hear today, maybe go online, maybe chip in $10, $20, up to $2,800, whatever you want to do. I'm always fond of saying I'm entitled to nothing, but I am willing to ask for a just cause. So every little bit helps for good constitutional governance here in our country.
It's a real honor to have had you in the studio today. Thank you, sir. Patrick Morrisey, the AG for West Virginia, now a governor candidate, and we wish you the best, sir.
Thank you so much.
So appreciate Patrick being here, and we're now going to move to another guest that is with us today, and that is the young man that leads out this incredible, amazing thing called the Christian Tech Center. Andre Klass is with me today. Andre's been up here a couple of times, I believe now, right?
Yes, indeed. I'm glad to be back with you to spend the afternoon together.
Yeah, that's right. Afternoons with Mike. I mean, that's what it's called. The Christian Tech Center Ministry. Now, this idea, I know that you had this. This was something that was moving in your heart, a way to give back to people in the community, but also to use the skills and the talents that God had blessed you with and your understanding of computers and how important they are. I remember from the last time we talked, that's really a passion for you to have this desire to help people who need computers but might not be able to get one.
Indeed, Mike. And of course, while at the same time glorifying the name of Christ as we do it. So now our organization is 2 years old, and we've already given away over 1,000 free computers to individuals and families of greatest hardship and other nonprofits all across the Central Florida region.
Oh, that's so great. Congratulations on that, Andre. And again, just looking back at our conversations, I remember that people can donate to you. First of all, let's talk about how you get these computers to begin with. Most of them are either donated by individuals or businesses, right?
Yes, indeed. And so we get computers that are donated from different people that don't need them anymore, and they give them to us or businesses and organizations when they go through their tech refresh cycles, if you will. Like, say here at the studio, you have a computer and the computer's getting a little bit up there in age where it's like 4 or 5 years old, where you have applications that you require something more powerful or meeting new standards.
Like speed, you know, clock speed.
Right, but at the same token, these are still good, perfectly functioning, reliable devices that can potentially make a difference in somebody's life and afford that means to be able to reconnect with the world, academic opportunities, employment, mm-hmm. Social integration for the day-to-day person in their quality of life. So we're able to take surplus assets like that and then we securely wipe them, professionally recondition them to modern standards, or if they're already meeting a good modern standard, then the hardware is already in a good stage where it can make a difference for somebody. And then we give it back out into the community, individuals and families that have been previously vetted, so that way we can address their unique circumstances of need, or to other nonprofits, churches, missions that might potentially have a need where they don't have the resources to afford funding for new purchases of equipment like this.
Mm-hmm. Now, do these computers need to be in perfect working order coming to you, or do you repair them from time to time?
Oh, we definitely spend a lot of time repairing equipment that's not working. Many times we're able to use non-working equipment to be able to use the parts from those to fix other pieces of equipment. Sometimes we get computers where it's just something that's affordable and simple, like a bad battery or a bad keyboard or a bad hard drive, that we can repair it and then bring that device back up to perfect working order. And that way it saves a lot in the long run in keeping our operation running lean and cost effectively, that many times computers that still have a great operational value might only end up costing us about 10, 20, 50 bucks to repair.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes the whole big difference in somebody's life when we give it back out.
Because the computer itself would still be worth, when you're done with it, still worth hundreds of dollars perhaps. And like you said, it's all the difference in the world for somebody that needs it.
That's right. And the average retail price of a computer when you go to a big box store is around $500. So you multiply that by a thousand computers, and that's already $500,000 of economic impact just within the past 2 years. And that's not even including all the free repairs that we've done. And of course, we also do free tech training workshops as well. So it's a threefold approach that people that have computers that they can't afford to have them repaired, we're able to help fix them for free. And then we also provide that functionality guidance in partnership with other nonprofit organizations such as the Sharing Center, Pathways to Care, United Against Poverty, where we're incorporated into their curriculum for workforce development. And then, of course, our workshop, which is also a public-facing facility in Longwood, where people can actually come to receive the help. That's also our workshop where we're actively preparing these computers and getting them up and running and taking that 15 years of experience that I have as a certified computer technician and then applying it to the day-to-day operation to be able to serve as many people as possible.
Was there any kind of a prototype business like this already in operation, or did God just give you something that was kind of fresh out of the box, so to speak?
Well, I've taken a lot of professional experience from my previous career. Of course, starting with computers when I was 17 at a flight simulator company, where I had a lot of hands-on with preparing and testing equipment. But then also, for nearly 10 years, I worked at a local computer retailer, and their main specialty was reconditioning of surplus computer equipment for public resale.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, from that, I've learned a lot of what goes into testing hardware, preparing hardware, and fixing hardware. And even today, I'm still learning. The best technicians are always learning, as you know,
Software's
always changing, hardware's
always
changing.
That's true for us all, by the way.
Indeed. So a lot of those quality protocols that and those processes that I've learned in my previous work, I was able to apply directly to the operation and making sure that I know the battery needs to hold this much charge and show a good amount of health, that all the keys on the keyboard need to be working, what's the minimum requirements for different applications like work at home or current supported operating systems, and how to troubleshoot, like doing virus cleanups, doing tune-ups, making sure that the computer's not missing any of the driver software that it needs for the all the different parts of it to work correctly. So, of course, being able to master a lot of these talents, though, of course, is not necessarily from me, if you will, but it's really the Lord using me as an instrument, as his hands and feet, to most importantly apply these talents to glorify his name and be able to make a difference. And that's really where the inspiration and the vision came from, of being able to address a need that few people have been addressing, in which case access to reliable working technology, and then be able to build upon this, not just as a community service organization, but also as a ministry of service.
It's wonderful. Andre Klass is my guest. I'll be back with Andre in a moment. He's from the Christian Tech Center Ministries, and we'll be talking about a big gala that's coming up there in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. Don't go away.
If you're a Christian business person and you want to meet people who want to do business with you, you need to join the Central Florida Christian Chamber of Commerce. Why? Because the mission of the Christian Chamber is to build kingdom, business, and community. And it all starts with the Christian principle of building relationships. To learn more about the Christian Chamber and all the different ways you can get engaged with hundreds of other Central Florida Christian business people, visit cfchristianchamber.com or call 407-258-3570.
Andre Klass carries the title at his company, Tech Missionary. Now, that's a new one to me. I like it. He is doing a work for the Lord from an idea that God gave him about taking the skills and experience that he had and forming this a Christian tech company that helps other people They receive computers from individuals or companies, and then they'll go through, they test them, they refurbish them where needed, and then they are making them available. And this is the kicker, at no extra cost, no charge to their clients. And that's the part of this that is truly ministry oriented. And so I know you're a nonprofit. I'm wondering, how is it that you keep the doors open? Let me go that way.
Well, it's really all the Lord's provision, because in truth, we never really know where our funding or support's going to come from until it just comes to us, really. I do a lot of direct community outreach and trying to get sponsorships and trying to get support for the organization. And really, it's the blessings of the Lord that those who open their doors for us, who are willing to give and help support our operation, and other organizations that sometimes it takes a little bit of persistence, but it's really a true blessing when these opportunities happen. And just as an example, just within this past fall, Advent Health came on board with us as our largest funding partner for this fiscal year, which their support accounts for nearly a third of our annual operating budget.
Wow. So you're not making money from people who you serve. So it takes people like Advent and other individuals, other businesses. You're a 501c3, right?
Indeed. And we also do supplement our operational needs by offering computer repair services to the public. But unlike most computer facilities, where they have a service fee schedule like you would expect at many of the big box retailers, we just offer our services on a donation-supported basis. Mm-hmm. So anyone can bring a computer to us, and then it's a donate-what-you-can model. And sometimes some people have been very generous in their giving when we're able to help them out with their technology needs in that regard.
Now, is the gala that is coming up, is that kind of a fundraiser? Is that what that would be like?
Indeed so. Our big fundraising event is our annual gala, which is set to coincide with the anniversary of us opening the doors. So this is an annual tradition for us every May. Mm-hmm. And so our next one is going to be on Saturday, May 11th. And our title sponsor this year is, in fact, Advent Health. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge blessing. We're going to have a formal dinner. There will be raffle prizes. There will be a silent auction. And of course, some great music and great speakers, including, just like last year, we had Joe Nestor, who's going to be returning to perform for the second year in a row.
What kind of music does Joe do?
So Joe is a Christian artist. Many of his songs go into the heart of recovery and faith. And he's a great brother of Christ from Lake Mary Church. Mm-hmm. And so he's actually local to the area here. And all of his music is original, and it's really well done.
Would it be contemporary style or country, or what format would you call it?
Well, there's a mix of different styles depending on the song. And in fact, he's even partnered with another Christian artist that we've been helping support tech-wise, SYL Noise. And so they've actually have Christian rap releases, originals that they've actually done together on collaboratives. And the really cool thing, again, they both go to my home church, which is Lake Mary Church. And that, again, it's more relationship building that we've been able to have here with friendships and coming together who believe in this vested vision. Other talent that we have presenting include Dexter Sanders.
He's a buddy of mine. I love him. I worked with him up in Gainesville years ago.
Indeed, and he just helped us recently on a very big way with some large-scale projects. He just donated 150 Android tablets that we were able to distribute for some local projects here, including for Mephibo's House, which is part of Northland Church's Mercy Road program.
Wow.
Another presenter we have, of course, is going to be one of our founding board members and the mayor of the city of Longwood, Tony Boney. And we're going to have great food, which is being donated by Hollerback's German Restaurant, Chianti's Italian Restaurant, and Mi Casa Kitchen. So it's going to be high-quality food and a very great event in which Harvest Time International is once again donating the use of their facility for the event at 225 Harvest Time Drive in Sanford.
Now, is there a charge to come to the gala, or is it just you come and then out of the abundance of people's hearts, they give?
Well, of course, as with any fundraiser event, there are going to be admission, but we do have some early bird ticket specials right now. So they're very, very affordable, in which all the proceeds from everything there, including tickets, tables, the silent auction, the raffles, all of those proceeds will go back to support the mission of Christian Tech Center. And if you're listening and you also happen to have a business or organization that would potentially be interested in being a table sponsor, we do have some great table sponsorship opportunities, which also provide a lot of value and visibility for your organization.
That's great. Now, this event is Saturday, May 11th from 6 to 9 p.m., and the location again is Harvest Time International, and that is up in Sanford. And again, you've got a website, I'm sure, for all this, right?
Absolutely. So for information about the event, you can go directly to christiantechcenter.com/gala, or if you go directly to the homepage, you can also click the gala button right there on the header. We also have information about the event on our social media channels as well.
Well, this is really going to be an exciting thing, I know, for the people that you've benefited. Again, 1,000 already that you've given away in just 2 years' time.
Indeed. And it's not just individual people, but of course, especially when you have families where you have numerous children in the home. Last year, we actually partnered with Seminole County Schools Families in Need Division, where there are school social workers on the campus actively identifying families of greatest hardship where the students need them for their homework, just as young as kindergarten. Mike, kindergarten, students are expected to complete their homework online, and if they can't do it, they're being failed. And of course, 90% of employers require job applications to be submitted online. So that's where we get referrals from organizations like Christian Help or the Rescue Outreach Mission, and many others that are actively trying to place with employment, with meaningful income. And also the recovery community, we work directly with Recovery Connections and Teen Challenge, people working to rebuild their lives and be able to elevate themselves to a new standard of living where they're overcoming addiction, building new bridges of faith, and trying to regain a foothold and some sort of control that these men and women in these programs were able to provide computer equipment for. And that can make such a huge difference, that the computer is the new household toaster. It's the gateway to the modern world, the biggest 21st century essential, especially since what we've seen with COVID-19.
Now, you're right. I mean, you know, you look back at my life and I'm hearing you say something that was shocking, that kindergartners are being expected to complete their work on a computer. That's all news to me. And when I was in kindergarten, I think the biggest responsibility I had was whether or not I remember to bring my nap mat that would roll up so nicely in a little square cubicle, like kind of a part of a shelving unit. And I'm thinking these kids are having to learn early on this whole thing. But for many kids, that's not a problem. They understand computers better than a lot of their grandparents, right?
Indeed, that it's become an affinity and an essential. And it used to be, I remember when I grew up, I was learning cursive. And back in high school, then the big stressor was having to pay for a Texas Instrument TI-83 or TI-89 graphing calculator.
Yeah.
And those devices would actually cost just as much as a computer, if not more.
That's right. Things have changed a lot, and they continue to do so, although I think the rate of some of the basis around PCs and even Macs changes have slowed down a little bit than what they were in those from 98, let's say, all the way to 2010. I mean, during those years, you buy a computer and within a month, it's almost obsolete from the standpoint of technology, because tech was changing so rapidly. Yeah. So your guys, the people that work at the tech center, you guys have to keep up with all that.
Well, we don't actually have employees other than myself as the full-time executive director. I'm blessed to have a great team of volunteers that has been helping me with preparing computers, and we appreciate all the help that we can get. But to that direct point, indeed, technology continues to change and evolve at a faster and faster pace. Last month, I was at a conference at the Rosen Plaza Hotel, and there was some good, some bad, and some ugly. And I must say, AI is the new Tower of Babel. It is essentially people trying to create their own God. And it's crazy how many people are so convicted that that's the way of the future. But in truth, for me, it's the wrong future, because for me, AI is a counterfeit. It's an imposter. You don't know what is real content, what is fake content. But whereas people are trying to steer people into a specific future of their choosing, what I do with Christian Tech Center is that we're trying to take people that are stuck and falling behind and get them caught up to the current and today's modern standards and today's essential needs. We're seeing indeed the manufacturers trying to force obsolete technology at an even faster pace, where even devices that are fully working aren't even able to meet modern standards. We're especially seeing that a lot with phones and tablets in particular, that they're being made to be more and more disposable. But I'm going to go to a statistic that I learned from Pastor Shaddy in one of the recent messages he had. So before World War II, the collective knowledge of the world would double approximately every 100 years. After World War II, then the collective knowledge of the world would double approximately every 25 years. And now in today's age of information, the collective knowledge of the world is doubling at a pace of every 1 to 2 months.
What?
Months.
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 Wow.
So that is really the way the world is continuing to go, where reliance and dependence on accessible technology has become really more essential than ever. And so when we provide this equipment, for me, it's not specifically about the fact that everything is going on with cyberland and whatnot. My predominant focus is what I'm going to be able to do helping a family to excel academically or get their GED, get their diploma, get them to a state of self-sufficiency, getting a job. Is what we're doing able to elevate their quality of life? That's the key metric that we focus on when we do what we do. But of course, on top of that, the experiences that I've had with Christian Tech Center, when people are celebrating the name of Christ, that we did something for them that seems so benign and so basic, but opening up so much possibility, it's truly tremendous. Like last year, the gentleman we gave a computer to, who was a part of the LGBTQ community, we gave a laptop to him. And then a few months later, then he reached back out to me, a few weeks later, to ask if I could come to help service the computer and also to bring him a Bible. I mean, the greatest joy comes from when somebody is able to find that relationship with God or desire relationship with God, because they have had no other prior experience as to what the love of Christ is all about until we showed up and provided them essential technology help in that common interest saying that everybody needs technology. And the thing is, Mike, that's something that I will never compromise on, that Christian Tech Center's mission statement is to further the gospel of Jesus Christ through technological advancement of our community. And sadly, we have had some secular organizations that have just straight up refused us support or consideration or fair treatment just because of our mission statement and just because I choose to put Christ at the center. And you know what? That's okay. Because in truth, I know, just as the Lord has continued to do for the past 2 years, that he's going to continue making a way for us to be able to keep serving. We're believing for a successful gala. We're believing to find more sponsors. And of course, our biggest need right now, Mike, if I may also put that out here, we need a cargo van, like a Ford Transit, Connect, an NV200, Dodge ProMaster City, something small, but give us that ability to have in-house transport capability, to pick up donated equipment, to service more clients at their homes and have a mobile workstation, and of course, be able to self-deploy large volume projects without having to disrupt the work schedules of my faithful volunteers. So of course, we're actively looking for a company with a big fleet or car dealership chain or some sort of organization that might be able to help us with something like that.
All right, so this is a nonprofit. This is called the Christian Tech Center Ministry. And Andre Klass is the one and only paid or full-time, if you will, employee of it, using volunteers, like he's already said. And they're doing all of this, helping people, being the 501c3, then that means that if people donate to you, or even donate the things of gifts of kind, like used computers, that is still all tax deductible to them. They can get some gifts of kind or whatever credit on their 1040 when they file it. So this is a pretty exciting way that people can get involved in helping the community. And I just think it's amazing that you have on your board a mayor of the community that you live in Longwood. That's pretty cool too. So you're really an organization that is not only serving the people of that area, but you're right there. You've got the mayor serving with you, and we'll be at this gala.
Yes, that's right. And since last year, we've actually more than doubled the size of our board. So last year when I was on the show, it was myself plus 3. Now it's myself plus 8. So now we have over a century of experience of technological and philanthropic knowledge that is coming to the forefront in the leadership and the guidance and the future of this organization.
That is really exciting. Congratulations to you. Again, let's go through. We got just enough time to go through the details. The gala is an event. It's a fundraising event, and it is Saturday, May 11 at 6 p.m. at Harvest Time International, and that is in Sanford at 225 Harvest Time Drive. Give us the website, how people can learn more about your ministry or about the gala.
I'll be glad to, Mike. So you can learn more by visiting ChristianTechCenter.com. And the address of the Christian Tech Center facility is 1006 West State Road 434 in Longwood, 32750. Our phone number is 407-545-8090. And again, our website is ChristianTechCenter.com, where you can learn more about our programs, partnerships, background of what we do, and of course, how you can potentially donate or even, of course, book tickets to our upcoming celebratory gala.
All right, Andre Klass, thank you for being with me.
Thank you, Mike. Always a pleasure.
All right, and we'll be back in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike.
Join host Mike Gilland for The Shepherd at Work every Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m. You will be introduced to a marketplace leader that will help you learn to walk out your faith wherever you live and work. The Shepherd at Work is sponsored by the Central Florida Christian Chamber, building kingdom, business, and community throughout our area. That's The Shepherd at Work, this Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m.
Welcome back to the program, and with me on the line from Washington, D.C., Paul Kaminar. Paul is the lead counsel with NLPC, that stands for National Legal and Policy Center. He's been on my show before. He deals with all sorts of public policy. He's an appellate attorney who counsels clients on legal, regulatory, and public policy matters. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
You know, we hear more from the mainstream media today about just the hatred for our former president, Donald Trump, than I can ever imagine would ever have happened. And the stuff that we hear, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4. How many times can he be indicted and charged with stuff? And this most recent stuff that's going on with this outrageous $450-some-odd million fine that was reduced. But all of this is going on in the public eye, and sadly in our country, people are divided as to what they believe about it. So I'm hoping that you can offer some good insight and help for those that are our listeners, how we can approach this. So give us, if you will, like the broad brush update of what's going on these cases before not only the Supreme Court, but these other courts.
Sure. No, there's plenty of them. I don't know if we have time to talk about them all, but just to pick up on your last one about the $450 million bond he was supposed to post the other day in order to appeal that underlying judgment. They reduced the bond to about $150 million, but the fine is still there. So if he loses the case on appeal, he will have to pay the full $450 million plus interest. So it's up to like $600 million. So he got a little break there. But the underlying suit there is ridiculous because there was no harm to the banks and insurance companies who lent him money over the years. They claim he overvalued his assets. That he didn't do that, number one. Down there in Florida, the court said Mar-a-Lago is only worth $18 million. So if anything, his assets were undervalued. I mean, you can't get an empty lot down there in that neighborhood for $18 million, let alone the whole Mar-a-Lago estate and so forth. So that case is thankfully going to be appealed and is appealing. And I think he's going to win that case.
So let me interrupt on that one, Paul, real quick,
sure.
Just on this point, because I think this is really germane to this the whole discussion. You've just mentioned something that is a basis of fact, that if they looked at the property values in that area where Mar-a-Lago is, it would be worth more than that. We are living in a day where it seems to be fact and law really don't really play into what's going on, and it's somehow by the national news media accepted. Am I seeing that right?
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's in many respects part of the court case that is being brought in New York here and in these other cases by prosecutors who are clearly doing a vengeance against Donald Trump. The case that Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York, brought in this tax case is totally ridiculous. It's never been used in this fashion. And like I said, none of the banks were defrauded. They were loved to lend money again to Donald Trump. He repaid all the loans with interest, et cetera. So this is clearly a vendetta that they're going after Trump because he's running for president. They wouldn't be doing this if he wasn't. So that case is one example of the kind of vindictive and selective prosecution that's going on. And the same is with the one in Georgia. If I can turn to that, that's the one where Fannie Willis was recently slapped, what we call bed slapped, with respect to her relationship with her lover, special counsel, Nathan Wade. The judge sort of split the baby and two, and said, well, Fannie, you can stay on the case, but your lover boy has to go. And so he's out of the case. But she is really damaged goods. The judge just really tore into her about her possible lying on the stand about when this relationship started. She says it started after he was hired. There's evidence and testimony that started well before. So that case is going to go forward. Question whether that will go before the election, and the Fannie Willis wants it to do that. I don't see that happening because just the jury selection takes months to get that going. So the only trial that will be going before the election, as I see it, is this one in New York,
right,
which is also a ridiculous underlying lawsuit. They're saying that he defrauded in his financial statements with the Trump Organization, where the money he paid to his attorney, Michael Cohen, for the non-disclosure agreement with Stormy Daniels was booked as a business expense. Again, no one was harmed. Number two, that Alvin Bragg in New York is a local prosecutor, and these are nickel and dime charges. So what does he do? He says, well, let me see if I can say that this was a campaign violation, his campaign, and that the money was actually used to help him look good for his campaign. But the problem with that is if it is a federal violation under the federal election laws, and I used to be an attorney at the Federal Election Commission, both the FEC and the Justice Department looked at these charges and didn't bring any charges. They didn't see a case here to bring.
Right.
So Alvin Bragg is saying, well, I don't care what the feds say. I'm going to make a big federal case out of this, literally and figuratively. And that one is the weakest of the cases that are against Donald Trump, and I think he will win that one as well. So that takes care of that. Then there's, of course, the one there in Florida, in your neck of the woods, mm-hmm. the Mar-a-Lago case, and the court down there, Aileen Cannon, the other day ruled in a couple pretrial motions. She denied the dismissal of the case on grounds of the what's called the Presidential Records Act, where his attorneys argued that Trump was authorized to keep these documents under the Presidential Records Act. And she denied the motion, but she basically, interestingly, said, well, you can raise it again during trial. And she put out an order that the, both the prosecutor and the defense attorneys are supposed to give her some sample jury questions about this issue as to how the jury should interpret it. It's got people scratching their heads about what's going to go on there. But the bottom line is they want that trial to go sometime this summer. But again, there may be some hiccups on that case, and it will probably not go before the election. And then, of course, the big one is here in D.C. is the so-called election fraud case that Jack Smith also brought here. And that one is being held up now because of the immunity issue. His attorney said that he is immune from these criminal prosecutions. And his argument is basically a sound one, because under the Supreme Court ruling in the Nixon v. Fitzgerald case some years ago, the court said that you cannot sue the president civilly for damages while he's president if what he did was within the scope of his presidential duties. And the Supreme Court said he's got absolute immunity for that. So all Trump is saying is, look, if I have absolute immunity from being sued civilly for stuff, actions I took when I was in the president, I should also be immune criminally, because the whole purpose behind the immunity is you don't want to have the president hamstrung while he's exercising his duties for fear that he's always looking over his shoulder and saying, oh, gee, is my opponent going to file criminal charges against me once I leave office, or civil charges? And therefore, that's the basic underlying reason why there should be immunity in this, in that case as well. So that will be heard April 25th, about a month from now, in the Supreme Court. And that's going to be really the big case that it's going to be interesting how that case turns out. And even if he loses that case, there's still some pretrial motions that have to go back to the D.C. court here. And I don't see that case starting before the election. And that's what this whole game is all about, according to the Democrats. They want to try to get these trials before the election, to interfere with the election. They're doing the best they can to do that. Trump and his attorneys are doing the best they can to push this off, because it's election interference, plain and simple, as well as being a vendetta. So you've got those four criminal cases that we just discussed. And then we also mentioned that a civil case for the tax case that's pending. So that, in a nutshell, is where everything is at this moment. But I'd be glad to go a little deeper on any of those cases if you'd like.
Yeah, with regard to the J6, the January 6th event, obviously, right. It's important to point out that, just as you said, Trump was president during that time, so he still maintained that office, and it would stand to reason that the things that they have accused him of would have happened while he was yet president. Lame duck, yes, at that point, but still president. Now, the right. Supreme Court also heard about I believe they've already had some agreement on it, and about the defendants, those people that are in jail still to this day, since that time, now 3 years ago, would this April date also apply to their situation?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Yeah, just to let your viewers and listeners know, there is an appeal before the Supreme Court in addition to the immunity case brought by several January 6th defendants who are arguing that the charge against them on obstruction of a congressional proceeding is invalid as applied in this case. And that argument is a good one, because that statute that the prosecutors have been using was part of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which was a business case where the company destroyed evidence in their computers and so forth when they were being prosecuted. So Congress says, well, we're going to pass a law that if you destroy evidence when you're being sued by the government, et cetera, that in itself is a crime. And so they try to apply it here. And the question is, well, wait a minute. What evidence were these January 6th protesters destroying? And the government made this ridiculous argument saying, well, the evidence they were destroying or they wanted to destroy was they wanted to get to that box that's sitting on the Senate table where all the electoral votes are there, where they're supposed to count the votes, and that they wanted to go in and tear them up, and that's the crime that's taking place. Well, you know, just saying it shows how ridiculous that is. I mean, it's one thing to charge them with trespass and things of that nature, but the big felony charge is this obstruction of a proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
And two of the Jack Smith has four big counts against Donald Trump here in D.C., and two of those are this very statute. So if the Supreme Court rules, and they'll have a ruling by the end of June, both in that case and the immunity case, the Supreme Court rules that, hey, that statute doesn't apply with the January 6th issue. Those two counts are struck from the indictment against Trump and just leaving him with two other charges that are pretty flimsy, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned. There's a lot more that's going to be happening here, and I think there are a lot of good arguments that are being made. And then even if he is found guilty in any one of these cases, he has a right to appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are saying, oh, if he's found guilty before the election, then a lot of people are not going to vote for him. But he may lose some votes there, but people have to understand that he has a right to appeal. And a lot of times on these political cases, the conviction's overturned. In fact, the one that Jack Smith brought against a former governor here, McConnell here of Virginia, on a bribery charge, went to the Supreme Court a few years ago, and the Supreme Court reversed 9-0. So Jack Smith got bounced on that one. And a couple other high-profile cases when Jack Smith was in the government. So stay tuned here. Don't take these charges that serious. In fact, a lot of these cases are having the opposite effect. They're getting Trump more support.
Yeah, that's what it appears.
Base,
right.
Yeah, as well as from some independents who think that this is lawfare going on, and it's basically trying to interfere with the election. They tried that with getting him off the ballot. Thank God the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that he can stay on the ballot. I mean, that's how ridiculous that lawsuit was when you actually get the liberal judges on the Supreme Court agreeing
well said.
With you there.
Yeah, that's right. Paul, we're out of time, but I will be checking back in with you in about a month to find out the whole updates on all of these things, all of these cases that the former president will be facing. And thank you for your expert opinion on these things and for explaining them all to us. That helps so much. And the website is nlpc.org, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, go to our website. You'll read all about these other cases we're doing. And about Hunter Biden, we're going after him. So a lot of good stuff on our website.
Lead counsel Paul Kaminar, and that's all of our time. We'll see you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.